Father Ben Seiberg is one of my best friends, a good priest friend of mine. We've been friends since the beginning of seminary together. And once we got ordained priests, we made it a point that we would plan vacation time together, just get a chance to get away with a few other priests, hanging out, relaxing. So 13 months ago, Father Ben gives me a call, and he was just like, Dan, I have the perfect place for us to go on vacation. And I have props for this, so hold on a second. We're going to go to Disney. And I was like, that's great. I've never been to Disney before. That sounds awesome. Can't wait to go. It should be a miraculous, magical journey. And he was just like, well, there is a catch to this. I was like, what's that? And he's like, well, when we go in January of 2019 to Disney, we're going because we're going to run a marathon. I was like, well, that's not nearly as exciting now. But sure, you know, 13 months ago, a marathon seemed forever away. I had plenty of time to train. I was like, no big deal. Let's do it. Let's go to Disney. Let's run a marathon, which neither of us had ever trained for or run a marathon before. It is awful. I don't recommend it. But as the 13 months went on and we kept training and we got closer and closer to the deadline, I just was, every time I'd go out for a run, I was just cursing the name of Father Ben Seiberg. Like, it was just starting to wear on me, the training, getting ready for this, and the nerves that went with it, never having run 26.2 miles in my life. So it was agonizing. We were getting ready for this. We kept getting closer and closer to the deadline, and I kept hearing from folk different ways to kind of like psychologically prepare for the marathon. And specifically for Christians, there's a great way to do it. So there's 26 miles, 26.2, yes, I'm going to keep saying that, 26 miles that you run. And one of the ways to kind of handle that is you can begin to create a list of intentions, one intention for every mile that you run. So you're basically praying a mile for these different causes. So I have my list of intentions, 13 on each side of this sheet of paper that I was going to carry in my pocket, and then every time I crossed a mile threshold, I'd go to the next intention. So I'm the week leading up to the marathon, you know, I'm asking, you know, people at daily mass, I'm asking those at staff who I should pray for these 26 miles. So I'm getting this list put together. That's kind of being helpful, putting that aside. We're getting ready for the day itself, and it's getting more exciting, but also very nerve-wracking at this point. We were going to head together to Indianapolis on Friday, last Friday, and get together the night before, and then Saturday we were going to fly out. We were worried about the snowstorm last week, but that wasn't a big concern. We got in, and we watched the Colts game on Saturday night at our resort, which was very disappointing. That was an agonizing thing, watching the Colts lose to Kansas City. But then we got ready to start our marathon on Sunday, January 13th. We had to get up at 3:30 in the morning. No, at 3 in the morning, because then our ride to the park was at 3:30 in the morning, and then the race began at 5:30. So we got up, and one of our members, we had three priests, myself, Father Ben Seiberg, and then Father Mike Kucher, who you might remember, he was a seminarian here for a summer many, many years ago, and now he's a priest in Shelbyville. He put together for us, for all three of us priests to wear, a t-shirt. And this t-shirt that we all had, because, you know, I mean, there nothing says cool like three guys wearing the same t-shirt on race day. So we have this t-shirt, and it says Disney on the front, in the Disney font, by the way. And then on the back, and again, we had three priests that are going, at the top it says, three priests, one goal, finish. And so it was actually kind of nice having this t-shirt. We would be running along. Now, we weren't together. One of us, Father Ben, he was way faster than the rest of us. And then Father Mike Kucher hadn't run for 6 weeks leading up to the marathon, so he was way behind. But while we were running, I had a few gentlemen that would come up, and they'd tap me on the shoulder, and they'd be like, are there really three priests running this thing? And I'd be like, yes, there's one way ahead of me, and there's one way behind me. So they thought it was great that we had these three priests running this thing. But anyway, so we're there the morning of, 3 in the morning, we're getting ready to go. We get on our on the monorail at 3:30 in the morning. We get over to the race day, and then you got to walk like 2 miles to the start line. And then on top of all that, you know, you're just nervous. You've never done this before. My hands were all sweaty. And then I got a text message. I had my phone on me. I was going to listen to music for the marathon. And I got a text message from a buddy of mine back in high school, my best friend from high school, Ben Luderbach. And we keep in touch, but like not that terribly regularly, and never at 4 a.m. And am I getting, you know, text messages from him? But on that morning, right before the race, I got a text from him that said, "Dan, I need some prayers. My boy Adam is at Riley right now, 3-year-old Adam, and we're at our wit's end. We don't know what's wrong with him." So I text back, you know, "Well, what's happening?" And he said, "Well, it's been about 2 weeks now. 2 weeks ago, we thought he just had, you know, just stomach flu. Like, you know, that's all it was. He wasn't keeping anything down, but we're like, you know, that's going around, no big deal. But he said it just never went away. And we got very concerned because he wasn't eating anything. He was hardly drinking anything. He was severely dehydrated. So we took him into the emergency room, and the doctors thought, you know, well, it's just some kind of, you know, bacteria or some virus. They put him on antibiotics, you know, thinking that would take care of it. And it didn't. And they kept going to the doctors, and they kept sending them home, never quite fixing the problem. And this went on for 2 weeks. And finally, they went to Riley. And even Riley, the doctors were just beside themselves. They didn't know what was wrong with this kid. And they had different theories. They kept trying different things. Nothing was working. And he was getting to the point that he was so weak, he was so dehydrated, it was actually getting more and more difficult to get an IV in him just to keep him somewhat hydrated. To find a vein, they actually had to use like an ultrasound to find a deeper vein because they just couldn't find one on the surface. He was so lacking in nutrients and fluids. And my buddy, he texted and said, if they don't find a diagnosis soon, we're afraid we're going to lose him. We're afraid we're not going to be able to take care of this, and we're going to lose our boy." So I texted him back, and I said, "Ben, I'm about to run a marathon in Disney. I will offer up mile 26, the last mile, for Adam. And I'll continue to pray after that. Please keep me updated, you know, what's going on, if the doctors figure something out, but we'll keep you in prayer." So I got that on my mind, and we're finding our corrals for the race. And there's multiple corrals, you know, the different starting points. Now, Disney, I don't know why they do it this way, because I think it's more intimidating than is it encouraging. But every time that you get to your corral and they keep moving up to the starting line, they make you stop, and then they start your entire corral together. So you have corral A, which is where Ben was, Father Ben Seiberg. So he started right away. And every time they start one of these corrals on the race, it's the same routine. You know, they got Mickey Mouse up there, and he's going, 3, 2, 1, go! You know, and then they have the fireworks shooting off, and it's this big finale. And that's great for the start of the race, but then they do it for every single corral when it starts. So for me, I'm back in corral F. I have to see this like multiple times. And each time, I'm like, oh my gosh, we're going to be next. Like, we're going to be the next ones to go. And every time, you know, it's just kind of getting more and more, you know, almost masochistic, you know, Mickey Mouse up there. 3, 2, 1, go! And we're like, oh my gosh. So we get up there, and it's our turn to go, you know. And again, my palms are just sweating, and I've never done this before, and I'm freaking out. And he gives us the go-ahead, fireworks shoot off, and we begin the race. And I'm doing fine for the first, you know, like 13 miles. You know, I'm doing just fine mile by mile. They give you the markers. I'm going down my list. I'm praying for these different people and causes. St. Pat's was one of the things on the list, the entire parish. We're going along. And then I just hit a wall, like at mile 13. You know, now the struggle begins. I'm kind of walking a little bit, running a little bit. I get to mile 20, and at this point, like, it's like nothing's quite real anymore. You know, like I'm just kind of in a haze. My head is down. I'm just pushing through, and I lose track of the mile markers that they present to you. So I don't even know what mile I'm on anymore. I don't know who I'm supposed to be praying for anymore. You know, all my psychological preparations have gone out the window, you know, and I'm just kind of like struggling just to find anything, some semblance of sanity in all this. So I'm going along. I'm looking for signs, but I'm not seeing anything. I don't know how much further I got to go. And then I saw it, mile 26. We were on mile 26. The last mile had finally come up on us. Somehow I'd missed 5 miles. And I saw that, and I was like, I got to pray for Adam. And so that last mile, I ran the whole thing. The last mile point two, I ran the whole thing with Adam on my mind. Every breath I took, every step I took, it was for Adam. And I finished, and it was kind of a weird phenomenon. Like, if you've ever been on a ship, and then you step on land, and you can kind of still feel the boat rocking underneath you, even though you're not on a boat. That's what it was like. You got done. You didn't run anymore, but you still felt like you were running. It was a weird sensation. We got done. We met up in kind of the common area. And then we went back to the hotel room. Later that afternoon, I got a text message from Ben Luderbach. And he said, "Dan, I don't know what you did, but it worked. The doctors were in today, and they think they have a real diagnosis. They call it," and I'm going to mispronounce this, Henoch-Schönlein purpura, or HSP, is what it is. A very rare condition. The beauty of this, though, this diagnosis, is the treatment was just to give the kid steroids. That's all it was, just give him steroids. And he was released from the hospital on Friday, this last Friday. Perfectly fine. Adam is fine. Now, am I saying at any level that my running that 26th mile and praying for Adam was a direct cause of him being healed? Even me with my massive ego does not think that. I know that I was not the cause of that. But I'd like to think that it helped. I'd like to think that offering up that last mile of a marathon and all the agony and misery that went with it, along with all the other prayers that people were praying on Adam's behalf, I'd like to think that that did make a difference. It's an amazing thing that we see in today's gospel. We have before us Christ's first miracle. Here he is getting ready for 3 years of public ministry, you know, presenting to the world God's teachings, God's power in the world. And he does so with extravagant fashion, you know, this miracle, the wedding feast of Cana. But know what he doesn't do. Jesus does not show up here, and we know the story, they run out of wine, Mary tells them, you know, this is the situation, can you help out? What Jesus doesn't do, he doesn't just walk over to the 6 stone jars and snap his finger and they start brimming up from the bottom with wine. He could have done that, and it would have been amazing, it would have been miraculous, it would have been awe-inspiring for him to do that. It would have been written down for all centuries to see how powerful Christ was. Snap of the fingers, 6 stone jars filled with wine. But that's not how God works. God, when he came amongst us as Christ, he didn't want to give us a message of, here we are, the Trinity, at your beck and call, you pray to us, and we will snap our fingers and things will happen. Christ wanted to give us something much more special than that. And so what happens? We see that what Christ does is he turns to these stewards, these servers, and he says to them, here's what I want you to do. I want you to get these stone jars, and I want you to fill them with water. And then you're going to see something amazing happen. And so they do. They fill with water, and he transforms that water into wine. God, when he came amongst us, his great desire for us is that we would be able to participate in these miracles. Not cause them ourselves, but at least to be a part of it. That in our relationship with God, he allows us, he invites us to be a part of that grandeur. And that's insane to even think about. He doesn't need us for anything, but he desires us to be in the midst of that, to participate in these miracles, that we somehow feel like we're a part of it. You can only imagine these servers after the fact, you know, they see this water turn to wine, and they look at it to each other, they're like, yeah, I helped fill that bowl. I helped fill that jar. That was me that put that water in there. Now, for each of us, that's going to look a little different. And we hear that from the second reading today. We all have different gifts. We all have different ways that we can participate. But the question we have to ask ourselves today is, what is the water in our life? What is the water that we're willing to hand over to Christ so that he can work his miracles? Maybe it is the last mile of a 26-mile race, the agony and the pain that go into it. Maybe that's it. Maybe it's something vastly more beautiful. Maybe it's just the day-to-day life going to work and struggling through obstacles that come our way. Maybe it's just the trials and tribulations. Maybe it's the love we have for one another and our families and our friends. But whatever it is, we have to find that water and be willing to give it over to Christ so that we may participate in His wonders. And if you do, then you'll see change. You will see transformation take place, conversion of hearts. This is how God works. It's how He's always worked. We're no different now than we were 2,000 years ago. And the grand irony is that if we find that water and we hand it over, we're going to be the ones that are filled. Amen.